The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank. The bank for Kiwi, looking to get ahead in business and in life. A bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify. A bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose. Kiwi, making Kiwi better off. So what is market power? How do we know when a market is dominated by one or two or four companies in a way that means those companies are misusing their market power to increase their prices more than they should, more than they would be able to if it was a properly competitive market? Well, sometimes we know because often there might be just one supplier in the market. We can see it for ourselves. It's a monopoly. And sometimes it's a natural monopoly where, for example, you really only need one big airport. You could argue for all of Aotearoa, but certainly for Auckland, one big airport. So it's a monopoly. And a really sensible way to make sure that monopolies don't completely rot you with really, really high prices because you've got no other choice is to regulate them. And that's what happens a bit with the Auckland airport and some other parts of our economy. For example, the way that electricity lines companies charge us or Transpower charges us. And there are some other parts of the economy that have some regulation of, well, not so much prices, but certainly how they operate. And one of the most hot topics at the moment about who's using market power and who's got it is actually around that airport, which is regulated. Well, one part of its business, quite a big part, is regulated. The other parts aren't. This week on When the Facts Change, we look at the biggest stoush in corporate New Zealand at the moment between Auckland Airport and Air New Zealand. Two huge influences on our economy, two companies that for most New Zealanders, they will have to pay money to at some point or another, either directly or indirectly, over the next year or two. And right now, they are at loggerheads over the charges that the airport will pass on to airlines and the type of work that the airport is doing to reform, rebuild, renovate that airport and pass on the costs to airlines. At the moment, Auckland Airport is looking to combine those two big terminal buildings, particularly the domestic terminal with the international terminal, and to zhush up the domestic terminal. But Air New Zealand says that the airport is gold-plating this big project and that the costs will have to be passed on through the airlines to customers and that they'll be too high. This is turning into quite a battle. And this week on When the Facts Changed, we talked to the CEO of Auckland Airport, Carrie Hudahanganui, who has come into this job only a short period ago to find herself up against some of her former colleagues at Air New Zealand. The language is feeling fairly fruity in this debate, more fruity and exciting than you'd expect in corporate New Zealand, which tends to be quite restrained. And this will no doubt play out over the next few months as the regulator, the Commerce Commission, goes through the application from Auckland Airport to put up its prices and to pass on those costs of redeveloping the terminals. It's an interesting debate. Should monopolies have the power to charge what they want? Should it be limited? How should it be limited? What is fair? And what should be included in the regulation? At the moment, it's the landing charges and aeronautical fees that are covered by regulation, but not the parking buildings, the shops, the warehouses at the airport, which are such a big part of its business. Auckland Airport defends that in saying that if all of it was regulated all at once, that would reduce the incentives to invest and the ability to invest from the profits from those other parts of the business. No doubt Air New Zealand is not so thrilled with the idea. However, Air New Zealand faces plenty of its own criticism about how it uses its market power, and certainly over the last couple of years, rises in domestic air ticket prices have been faster than other price inflation, and certainly faster than air ticket prices on a much more competitive international landscape. I also talked to Carrie about climate change. What happens to an airport's future if we're flying a lot less or unable to fly? And she has a view on what happens next. So this week on When the Facts Change, we look at market power, at what one of our most powerful and important companies is doing, and a fight between two of them to find out who will win. This week on When the Facts Change. Well, welcome to When the Facts Change to Carrie Hurihanganui, who is the CEO of Auckland International Airport. Carrie, wonderful to have you on When the Facts Change.
Great to be here, Brian.
Now, tell me about this plan to revamp the terminals at Auckland Airport. And for an audience who maybe have been through the current version of the airport, can you paint a picture for them about what it might look like and feel like after you've finished?
Yes, certainly. Well, I mean, it's one of the pieces, as you say, we are the front door of New Zealand. So ensuring that we represent that appropriately is really important and that we grow with New Zealand. The investment we're making across the precinct right now is both to increase the much needed capacity, but also resilience for New Zealand's gateway airport. For those of you that have been through the domestic airport, it's nearly 60 years old. It was built in 1966, and it has served New Zealand well, but it is at the end of its life, reaching capacity and the ability to provide both the customer experience, not only for Kiwis, but visitors to our country, is getting challenging. And hence, we've started a program to replace that with an integrated terminal where the domestic terminal will be joined in with the international terminal. So all jet services will operate out of that new airport. Things that we're investing in over the next 4 to 5 years as part of that, we've got a central runway upgrades. That new integrated domestic terminal will have 26% more capacity with seats, as well as 44% more capacity for processing passengers. And for anyone that has stood in a queue going through security or otherwise, that is certainly not what people deem to be great experiences, and nor do we. So we'll be fixing that up. Having both of those under the one roof means that the iconic, and I use that tongue-in-cheek, green line walk between the two in rain, hail, or shine becomes a 5-minute indoor walk rather than a 12 to 15-minute outdoor walk. There's new baggage systems that use less electricity. And then we've got things like stormwater resilience, anyone that casts their minds back 2023 and the weather events. So increasing our resilience and inputting new stormwater ponds and piping as part of an airfield expansion as well. So lots of moving parts as part of that. Some of it which customers will experience firsthand, and some of it is, I guess, kind of behind the scenes, but really important stuff to give us the resilience and a fit-for-purpose airport.
Mm. So the airport builds some buildings and builds a runway and then charges the airlines an amount, I'm guessing, per seat for a landing and a takeoff. How else does the airport pay the bills for all of this development?
Yeah, well, one of the things that probably I'll take a minute to explain just is around that we as an airport, as are the other main airports in New Zealand, for Christchurch and Wellington, are regulated, and regulated for the elements that are natural monopolies. And what I mean by that is things like runways, apron, terminals, baggage systems, all of those things naturally don't tend to have a competition the same way other services do. So we are regulated economically for those. And then there is also the non-regulated parts of the business, which would be the likes of retail or property. We've got warehouses and logistics organizations because they operate in a more competitive environment. That regime is run by the Commerce Commission under Part 4 of the Commerce Act. And that's really focused on ensuring that airports have, the right incentives to make investments that serve in the long-term interests of consumers and New Zealand, but without over-earning as part of that. So that's where that regulation comes into play. And it's complex, but I guess in essence, that regulation requires us to do two things. One is that we consult with our major customers, such as airlines, on what capital investment we need to make, their feedback, and we do have 26 airlines operating into Auckland. So you're getting all of that feedback. You take it all on board and then you make a decision on that capital investment. And then a second separate piece is consulting every 5 years under the regulation that what we charge airlines to use the facilities, such as the airfield terminal, fuel, et cetera, comes in play. And so we've recently done that, and that price setting event, as we call it, is now with the Commerce Commission for their review of that, which, as I said, happens every 5 years, and we expect to hear from them on a draft report in May. We will consider that, and then that process will round out around September this year with a final report.
So my understanding is you present to the Commerce Commission your plans for investment in the various facilities and suggest a price, and then the Commerce Commission comes back and said, yeah, that seems fair or not, after listening to the views of the customers as well. So how much is this project going to cost, and how much of that are you flowing through into charges that are going to be there for the next few years?
Yeah, absolutely. And what we do as far as how we set prices, that is based on the Commerce Commission guidelines for that in terms of what is called the input methodology, which has lots of elements from obviously interest, cost of capital, all of those elements go into that, as well as the capital. We need to provide, it's called information disclosure, so we share with the Commerce Commission in detail what we're planning to build, what needs it meets, how much it costs, our operational costs for that regulated part of our business. So that information disclosure is comprehensive. And then, yes, you're exactly right. They review all of that and say, well, on balance, in terms of what's being built, all of the inputs to that methodology, and therefore the rate of return and the prices you set, we believe that's fair. We think that we've got some questions we would like more feedback on, or we think you need to review your pricing. So that's that process in the May and September that will be happening. But as far as what we're building and what that means, part of that Commerce Commission framework also requires us. So what we do what's called hard consult on the five-year pricing event, saying that's what we're doing and that's what we're pricing on. But we're also required to actually give kind of I'll call it a softer consult on a 10-year kind of roadmap of the things that we think will be required, depending on what your assumptions around passenger growth and those requirements. And so that the back 5 years of that 10-year period, we will consult in detail prior to that next pricing period. So you've got kind of a 10-year roadmap, of which 5 years of that is in detail. For us, what we've certainly been engaging and have commenced work on is that integrated terminal I talked about, which cuts across both that entire 10-year period or both pricing periods, and that is $2.2 billion for the integrated terminal to replace the domestic terminal. And then there's a further $1.7 billion, which is requirements related to that new terminal. So obviously, if you're growing and expanding the size and capacity of a terminal, that means you need to ensure you have the right capacity of roading and utilities, stormwater, all of those things to support that bigger size. So that $3.9 billion for the integrated terminal is being built and constructed over the next 4 to 5 years. And so it really won't come online until the next pricing period, but all of the work and investment and the funding of that is happening now. Just for clarity, airlines also don't get charged for assets until they are what we say is commissioned or in use. And so if you take the integrated terminal as an example, we are building that now, and that is due to open in late 2028, early 2029. It won't be until airlines are using relevant assets that they actually get charged for.
So $3.9 billion for the new combined terminal. What's going to happen to domestic and international passenger aeronautical fees, so the fees for landing and taking off, which in theory the airlines then pass on to you in the ticket price?
So what happens with that? If we look again, if on the basis of what is being charged for is when it's in use, if we look at this current pricing period, which went from 2022 to 2027, so we are in that period now, domestic jet landing fees increased from $7 that they were previous to this pricing period to $10 this past year, and they will increase $1.76 per passenger through to 2027 to land on about $15 for a domestic jet passenger. And that's in line with what you see being charged today at the likes of Wellington and Christchurch. In terms of what pricing is beyond that, that hasn't been set yet, because that next pricing period, as I talked about, that split between 5 years hard consultation and then the 10-year kind of roadmap, we will undertake that well in advance of the 2027-2028 transition into that next pricing period. And again, consult with airlines of the ongoing capital pricing for that period and otherwise. So that is still to run through.
Because there's been a number of $46 as the fee that it will eventually get to. Is that right?
No, actually, it is incorrect, and not quite sure where that number has come from. We have invited the airline to share that with us. And the elements that you need to think about is, in 5 years' time, what are the interest rates? What's the cost of capital? There's lots of things to consider, but we see a pathway, depending on the assumptions you put into that model, of considerably less than that. You'd be getting close to probably about half of that.
So Air New Zealand, which is your biggest customer and obviously the dominant player on the domestic routes, has opposed this plan and has been pretty grumpy about it, to the point where, and to be fair, Air New Zealand haven't used the word Taj Mahal, but a former Air New Zealand executive called Cam Wallace, who used to run MediaWorks, by the way, he described this plan as Taj Mahal. What's your response to that characterization?
Well, nowhere near a Taj Mahal, although I do have to confess I have not been to the Taj Mahal. But certainly as far as the intimation of that, what we have done, you know, the domestic terminal has been, quite frankly, pretty tired for a wee while. And yes, COVID, the prudent thing was to push pause on these types of projects until we all knew what the pathway was. So we are behind where we want to be. But it's been a topic of conversations for over a decade, consultation with airlines on it, what it should be. Airlines have supported the integration of the domestic jet and international terminal. You know, as recently as 2021, Air New Zealand and Barnes publicly supported the integration of the terminal, the project in its current form today. The project through COVID, we took the opportunity along with airlines to review and kind of value engineer to say, are there things here we think we should do differently or validate that they're still relevant? And again, they were very supportive of that. And the project fits with that bill and actually is still within 5% of the cost of what it was in 2021. So there's not been vast changes to that. And it will be functional and modern and take into account things such as climate, and it will deliver a good customer experience. But it is primarily focused on resilience, functional and seamless experiences for customer. There's not a lot of flashiness to it, but it will be appropriate for the front door of New Zealand.
Air New Zealand have been a bit cheeky and come up with an alternative plan, which they say that cuts the cost by $1 billion and used a design firm who had previously worked with Air New Zealand. So what do you think of their cut price version?
Well, listen, I mean, it was actually what I mentioned before that, you know, we've been consulting over the last 10 years, and it's really important we get this right, you know. So that's a piece that I accept. We needed to take time to do that. But it was some 7 months or so after that consultation closed that Air New Zealand presented us with that alternative. And we've looked at it in good faith in detail. And the challenge is that airlines are great at running airlines, but airlines, you know, capabilities to design airports, that you look at things differently, right, when you're an airline versus an airport. It certainly wouldn't save the $1 billion referred to. And in our detailed walkthrough, it would actually at best be 10% of that, which is, you know, circa $100 million, which equates to about $1 per passenger as you look going forward. And the fundamental piece, you know, we are now at detailed design and commenced work on this terminal. It's taken years to get to that point. You can't do a two-month exercise kind of on the back of a napkin to come up with a concept and be able to accurately say that it would save you $1 billion. And probably from our perspective, a functional airport, it was missing key things like adequate processing for border agencies and, you know, security goods truck stops that deliver the retail goods and the wine and cheese to airline lounges and all of those things. You had bridges to nowhere. So there was an element of there was kind of a concept, but it was missing really functional things that are important that for us to be compliant with regulations from Civil Aviation Authority and international bodies like ICAO. But you have to have a fully functional airport, and that design just didn't stack up.
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank's chief economist, Jared Kerr, on what's happening with inflation in 2024.
Globally, inflation rose to really high levels. We saw inflation averaging over 10% last year. Now central banks have reacted. They've tightened monetary policy. They've lifted interest rates to levels where it hurts. We've seen growth slow down, and we're seeing inflation coming off, which is great news because we import a lot of inflation from the rest of the world, and that imported inflation is easing. So half the job that we're trying to do locally is being done for us offshore. The other half, the domestic bit, well, that's the tough bit. That's the sticky inflation that's coming out of our housing market. It's coming out of construction. It's coming out of service industries, and it's going to be hard to contain.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Jared and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
One of the concerns the airlines have is that Auckland Airport has only part of its business regulated, being the landing charges, but the retail parts and the parking and the property parts, the warehouses and that sort of thing, aren't necessarily regulated. And one of the risks, they argue, is that you essentially plow the costs of building up this unregulated business and load it up into the regulated business and make the airlines pay for the capital costs of, you know, all of these unregulated things, which aren't necessarily about the landing and the takeoff, so the shops and the car parks and the warehouses. What's your view on that?
So first public response to that is that isn't the case, and actually the Commerce Commission is kind of the watchdog on this, ensures that's not the case. You know, I'd mentioned earlier about the two parts of our business, the aeronautical, as we talk about it, which is what airlines and operators use to run their businesses. That's regulated, terminals, runways, etc. And then we have other parts of the business, such as you say, car parking, retail and property, that operate in a competitive environment. You can, as far as parking, as far as property, warehousing and those things, And they are very separate, and there is absolutely no airline funding of those non-regulated assets. And as I say, the Commerce Commission model ensures that that's not the case. We operate under what's called a dual till model, and that means that obviously, as I say, you've got the natural monopoly of the airline and runway and terminal element, which is separate from the more competitive elements of it. And it's actually been, that model's been tested on a number of occasions. It was actually set up in 2008 when Parliament introduced that information disclosure regime for airports, and that dual till was the right approach. It was looked at again in about 2018 when it was, I think it was the Commerce Amendment Bill that it was looked at, and Parliament again stuck with the current regime and the use of dual till. And also in Australia, which has a similar model, in 2019, the Australian Productivity Commission looked at how airports are regulated and found it again that dual till works. And the reason that's important is you want to have the right incentives for airports to invest in that pace. And it's also often said by airlines that other parts of our business don't support aero or that they're in conflict. Remembering earlier, I'd said, you know, we don't charge airlines to use an asset until they are using it. And so if you take our new $2.2 billion terminal, for example, it has to be funded and built and in use before we can charge airlines, which if we say that's late 28, 29. So we borrow to fund most of our infrastructure build, and our borrowing capacity is determined by the entire company's performance. And so really profits from any non-aeronautical side of the business disproportionately support the funding of the aeronautical capital investment. You know, over the next 10 years, for example, it is forecast that 80% of our capital investment will be aeronautical regulated. Well, actually, that's, you know, our ability to fund that over the next 4 to 5 years is going to come from the performance of our entire business. So, yeah, there's some misnomers there. And we continue to work with airlines to clarify that with them, as does the Commerce Commission, who would ensure that doesn't occur.
Because, you know, over the years, there've been some concerns that there are big chunks of New Zealand's economy which have become dominated by large players, often formerly state-owned, either network or monopoly companies, and that this has led to a higher profit share and potentially higher inflation more recently. And, you know, obviously you're regulated, the aeronautical fees part of it. But it's interesting that one of the fastest pieces of domestic inflation in the last 4 or 5 years has been domestic air travel. And obviously a large part of that is Air New Zealand and its fees and its air ticket prices. So how do we ensure that business of flying domestically has a reasonable price and that the profits generated to both Air New Zealand and the airports are fair from a consumer point of view and keeps that inflation under control?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, recently the New Zealand Airports Association has called for government, for example, to implement domestic airfares and airline performance monitoring. And that's a view to do exactly what you're asking, is to say, how do we know how well they're serving the New Zealand market? They already do that in Australia, and as a comparative, for example, you have one airline that has 60% of the market, and they have that airfare monitoring in place. Here in New Zealand, we have one airline that has 86% of market share, but there is no airfare monitoring or economic regulation, you know, in place. And to your point, I mean, Stats NZ alone showed that in February, airfares rose, I think it was 7.4% compared to January, kind of in 1 month. So, you know, I think there is important. New Zealand is a small, geographically isolated country. We do need to ensure that businesses, we do need to ensure that aviation is serving the needs of the end users, which is the consumers. And you know, you have this natural tension. And I think the current regulation that airports have, for example, it recognizes that airports and airlines have fundamentally different, you know, short-term and long-term planning horizons. You know, airlines naturally, as service providers, are looking for short-term incentives to keep their costs as low as possible. You know, and that includes opposing investment in airport infrastructure or things that are going to either increase costs or increase capacity. Airports are looking at investing assets that are long run to say, you know, is this going to be a 10, 20, 30 plus year asset? So there's just different, we set prices 5 years in advance, and it's clear, you know, airlines can set airfares using, you know, dynamic pricing mechanisms to maximize yield, and that can change on a daily or weekly basis. So there's a natural tension there, and that's why things like monitoring of airfares and performance for airlines would be really important, just as the current regulation and information disclosure for airports is appropriate to assure those things are happening.
And one of the interesting areas around regulating monopolies is trying to work out what is the right return on capital level for a monopoly. And one of the ways that regulators around the world have done it is to say, well, this is a very regular returning asset. It's a bit like a bond. It's got some surety of revenue, and therefore it should have a rate of return which is lower than, you know, a much riskier, more volatile business. What sort of return on capital are you bidding for, if you like, from the Commerce Commission?
I think it is a good point. It's been really interesting when you talk about that, the level or perceived level of risk, and there's lots of things that inputs methodology that I talked to you about is very complex. There's lots of inputs to that, from the risk-free premium right through to other elements. You've got things like post-COVID, you know, for a long time in the past, there's been a view, exactly to your point, that airports have had lower asymmetric risk than other businesses, and you come out of the back of COVID saying that's challenged that assumption. Because if you look at the last pricing period for Auckland Airport, you know, there's an excess of $500 million loss of earnings. There is no recovery of that. There is no coming back from that. And COVID has demonstrated that there is high risk in these businesses when you get things like a pandemic. So, you know, that's part of the discussion now with the Commerce Commission and their review of our pricing of landing, to say, well, what is the view of that treatment? And in our submission and that pricing, we followed their input methodologies and really just updated the data for each of the criteria as part of that, with the COVID piece saying, well, actually, we believe historically that element that said it's lower asymmetric risk, we would like to challenge that assumption because the last 3 years have shown us that that's actually not the case.
So how far away then from the sort of so-called no risk or low risk return is the airport going to be? Because if you look at a government bond yield at the moment, you know, 4.5%, 5% or so, are you going to be close to that?
No, it is higher than that on the basis of again, all of the inputs. And if anyone has spare time on their hands, it is publicly available on the Commerce Commission website in terms of the input methodology, the submissions on our pricing and those elements. But it is taking into account, again, cost of capital and all of those elements that build up against the program that we are doing. Now, we're going to be interested, obviously, in the Commerce Commission's view on that. If we go back to the last price setting period, which is price setting event 3 is how we refer to it, we had put forward what we believe were all the relevant inputs following their model. They came back in their report and said, yep, we understand in effect what you're saying here, but we don't believe there's enough compelling evidence there necessarily, and we have a concern that you could be over-earning in that space. And so the airport looked at that and said, okay, whilst we believe there was a good case, we hear you. And the airport moderated and reduced pricing on the back of the Commerce Commission's feedback, which, you know, again, is evidence that the regime is working. So I think this piece, as we go forward, you know, we will be looking forward to getting the Commission's view on pricing, and we'll certainly take on board any questions or feedback they have as part of that.
Just stepping back a bit from this current debate about pricing and investment, there is a view that long-haul travel in an age of a warming planet and the need to get to zero emissions is going to be increasingly difficult and maybe significantly less than what it is at the moment. What's your view on, you know, how warm the planet will get, how much travel we're going to be doing? Because, you know, you're building assets for decades to come, and you know, people are starting to think about how warm the planet's going to be, how much flying there's going to be. What's your view on, you know, whether we can actually keep growing the number of tourists coming and how much we fly around the country? Because that's what you're assuming with your forecasts for the number of bays and the size of the buildings and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, there's probably two things there. One would be from a master planning perspective. We are ensuring that we have future flexibility depending on what demand presents. And so that's that, should you believe kind of those forecasts out, that you've got pathways for international growth and domestic growth and things like, you know, next week we have the transport hub stage one opening. Part of that build was to say we have put aside land corridors for mass rapid transit. Whether that takes the form of light rail or bus, or whilst there's not a definitive view on that right now for New Zealand or for Auckland, we have ensured that we've got those corridors set aside so that we can adjust to that. So that's the master planning. You're not building it, but you're planning and enabling it for the future. So we do a lot of our planning that way. And as we look forward for our building, things like the integrated terminal and the piers that are being built for that, that is a view of it's adding 26% capacity in those elements, but we're also really clear not to overbuild. So what we're not building for is to say that we are building for all capacity growth for the next 30 years. But we have a very clear master plan and pathway of additional piers should, you know, should that occur. So that's one element as far as what we're building versus what we're planning and future-proofing, so to speak. Then I think certainly when it comes to climate change itself, it's certainly, I think it's on top of consumers' minds as it is ours. And I do think you've got domestic and international are actually quite different. So I'll tackle them separately if I could. And for domestic, you've got very viable short-haul options such as electric aircraft. New Zealand is you know, a small country. The view that you would be able to fly many of the routes as technology is growing into that space, that is completely viable. You know, we've got things, we are doubling the capacity of our electricity network, and that is with the forward view of how do you enable electrification, future for that, of changing to heating and cooling internals away from gas, you know, vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that element from a short haul perspective. But the reality, we all know that international is a bit trickier, which is, you know, your point. And right now the challenge is there isn't affordable lower emission solutions. And we've got this balance of managing the climate and how we're thinking about that, as well as being an isolated trading nation that is reliant on air travel because of our geographic location. 80% of the freight that comes to New Zealand comes through in the belly hold of a passenger aircraft into Auckland. And so we've got this balance saying, well, how do we function as an economy and the ability to get goods to residents in New Zealand, but also the view that we have this issue that we need to solve for. And so we are part of Sustainable Aviation Aotearoa, and so that's working across the whole industry to say, what do we think decarbonization of aviation industry looks like? We're also on the advisory board of Heart Aerospace, which is a Swedish electric aircraft developer. And so in that, what is our scope three? What are the options? And you get into conversations of green hydrogen and SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, and those elements of saying actually technology is what's going to help mitigate those elements. But that balancing act that you can't eliminate long-haul travel from New Zealand because we don't have access to alternatives like many countries in Europe do. But at the same time, we can't use that as an excuse to not take action and collaborate, you know, on that. And then, of course, you've got we're also taking steps as far as our we will be net zero carbon from our direct scope 1 and 2 by 2030, and we are well on the pathway to that. But it is a incredibly challenging issue that is going to require not only industry to tackle it, but also more broadly nationally. How are we thinking about electrification? On many fronts is a viable alternative, but that does require that we've got the infrastructure to support the ability to move that way, for example, when it comes to electric aircraft or ferries or anything else that might fall into that space.
Kari Hutahangenui, thank you very much for being on When the Facts Change.
Thank you.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.